Okay, we'll start with our blessing.
Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Hamim V'Natan Lanu Et Torato Baruch Ata Adonai Notein HaTorah.
Today's class is going to focus on ideas that I learned from Rabbi Moshe Wolfson as well as Mrs. Esther Wien. And they are about concerning the 3 weeks that we are in now and the upcoming holiday, I'm calling it holiday for a reason, of Tisha B'Av, of the ninth of Av, which commemorates the destruction of both temples, both the first and the second temple, as well as the day of the beginning of World War I, as well as the day that was the beginning of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. It was also the date of the expulsion of the Jews from, I believe, France, Germany, and England, as well as the bombing in Argentina, as well as like every kind of, all these things were all on Tisha B'Av, all on the 9th of Av.
There was something in Persian too. I mean, there's something with Esther too, right?
Let's see, on Tisha B'Av. It's possible. It's very possible. Basically, there's always something. It's a spiritual sinkhole day. And you know how sinkholes appear and then like swallow everything up? So it's a spiritual sinkhole day. And we are in the process of approaching it during what's called the 3 weeks. The 3 weeks started on the 17th of Tammuz, which was a couple of weeks ago. A week from this Saturday night will be the beginning of the fast of Tisha B'Av. It starts Saturday night after Shabbos and goes Sunday, all day Sunday until Havdalah time. Do you have a question? A question, Lynn?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. So that is what we are talking about, is this period of time. We're also in a really strange time. I don't usually talk politics, but I say the deal that was signed with Iran is just an absolute disgrace and an outrage, and behooves people of goodwill and good conscience to object and make their voices heard. I believe that God runs the world. I'm not alone in believing that. However, every nation and every person is going to be held accountable for how they come down on the side of right or wrong. And even though we'd like to think that there's no such thing as right or wrong, and truth is relative, and what's good for me might be bad for you, and it's not the case that there is right and wrong, and good and evil, and this is a case of good and evil, and it can't be too much clearer than it is right now. So interesting, I'd want to go back first to a very interesting point that is made when the Jewish people were in Egypt. And we remember that when Moshe first goes to Pharaoh to tell him that he should let the Jewish people go, that Pharaoh, not only doesn't he let the people go, he increases the labor and not only increases the quantity, the quota of how many bricks need to be made, but he does something else, which is to, in a malicious way, he takes away the straw and doesn't give them the materials to even build the bricks. The Jewish people they're hard workers. They would have been happy, not happy. They would have been willing to build the bricks, but they were not given the straw. This meant that they had to fan out across all of Egypt and search for straw, and that they had to ask people's help, other Egyptian people's help. And the Egyptian people had the opportunity to decide, help the Jews with the straw or turn their back on them and side with Pharaoh. So Egypt is a large country. When the Jewish people were just being oppressed kind of in a certain location, in a more centralized location, people who were living on the outskirts, they could, in all honesty, say, well, what could we do about it? You know, they're in the city, we're 100 miles away from them, there's nothing we could do to help them. It's not on our heads, it's Pharaoh and the people who are living there, we have nothing to do with it. But once the people, the Jewish people, are spread out and fanning out around all of Egypt looking for straw, they are then coming face to face with every single person and basically saying, are you with us or are you against us? Are you on the side of right or are you on the side of wrong? And every person got to decide. Unfortunately, the Egyptians decided wrongly. And so when we see them later get punished when they are drowned and killed through the different plagues and through the splitting of the sea when the Pharaoh's people are all killed, the army is all killed, people say, oh, it's not fair, it was Pharaoh who did it. It's like, it wasn't just Pharaoh. Thank you so much, Andy.
Thanks.
That every single person had the opportunity to decide. This is because it was clear-cut. Was it good or wrong? You said, well, they couldn't say, well, I was brainwashed. I read, you know, the opinion piece, the editorial that said the Jews were bad, so I figured I'm not going to help them. It's like people, every single person is responsible for what they do. And that when there is a time when it is crystal clear what is good and what is bad and what is right and what is wrong, this means that the world is being given the opportunity to decide on what side are they going to fall, which side are they going to pick. And they can't say they didn't know. They can't say, well, you know, it was a little unclear. I couldn't really determine, you know, political rhetoric, etc. We have ISIS, who is exploding a child, that they detonated a child from a distance that they, as part of their demonstration for their training for their ISIS soldiers, they rigged up a baby who was the child of someone they had executed the week before, and then they detonated that child from afar to show people like how to work with explosives. Now, I'm sorry, I don't, there's no narrative that anybody can have that allows for that. And that really is no different than Arab snipers standing on top of a hill and aiming their power rifle and killing a baby in a mother's arm at, you know, exactly to do the same thing. It's like, there's really no difference. There's no difference. Or going to someone's home and cutting off babies' heads as they sleep in the crib. There's no difference. There is no difference. So if people have to be able to make these decisions and be able to say, I'm on this side or I'm on that side, and everyone will be held accountable. So while we believe that Hashem is running the world and our fate is in actually good hands because God is running the world, at the same time, there will be judgment about how everybody lined up. It'll be judged, the countries will be judged, the leaders of the countries, and the individuals in the countries. Because now, especially with social media, everybody knows everything, and there's no excuse. You can say, well, I didn't really know what was going on. Everybody knows. So what does this all mean? It says it means that the time of Mashiach is coming ever closer, that at the time when God's kingdom is ready to be established, all of these details have to be worked out, all of these choices have to be made, and just as this pattern had showed itself in Egypt before the redemption, before the Exodus from Egypt, we're seeing the same thing on the world scale level, because remember, Egypt was the superpower of its time. That was civilization. We're seeing it now, in our time, the same thing, where everybody is going to be asked, what side were you on? Where did you stand? What did you say? How did you react? What did you do? And we better have the right answer to give. So this means that we are held accountable. And it means, the bad news is oh my gosh, the world feels like it's coming apart at the seams. The good news is that it's not coming apart at the seams. It's the final test, and we're literally on the heels of Mashiach, and that redemption is around the corner, because this is what it looks like. So to go along with this idea, is the idea, it says, we call in the Song of the Sea, God is referred to as Ish Milchama, a man of war, which sounds kind of like, we don't like to think God is a man of war. What does that mean? First of all, God's not a man. What does it mean, a man of war? But focusing on the war part rather than on the man part. It says, what does it mean that God is a man of war? It says that God starts wars. It says, like, what does that mean? That doesn't sound very nice. Why is God instigating wars? It says, it's not that God starts wars. It's when the kingdom where the malchut, the kingship and the sovereignty of God is beginning to ascend and be established, it triggers the other anti that power to start rumbling and making their last ditch effort to establish themselves. It's like that energy triggers the other energy as well. So this is a hard statement to say and to really understand, but I'm just going to throw it out there. It's not my statement. Sometimes people talk about, well, as a result of the Holocaust, we got the land of Israel. We got the state of Israel. And people say, well, that is a very steep price to pay. But if we look at just the logistics, it appears to be true. However, this idea says it's the reverse. It is that the state of Israel was in the process of being established before World War II started, before World War I started. It was the late 1800s with, Theodore Herzl, like that whole movement to reestablish Balfour. All of that was, even before the Balfour, all of this was way before. It says it was the energy of the establishment of the State of Israel and the return of the Jewish people to start this phase, which we think, like, this phase is so long, but in the scheme of all of history, it's not so long. This was a very short time ago, that in the scheme of history, that this energy that was going to now bring the Jewish people back to the land of Israel, where they had been dispersed for thousands of years, now that's turning around, and the State of Israel is going to be established, and the process is going to go in the other direction. It says the rise of that raises up the energy, the anti-Israel, anti-Jewish, anti-God power. Hitler himself said that. His battle was with God. His battle was with morality and ethics. And he said, I am a pagan. I am a pagan. He wanted might makes right, said that ethics and morality are for weaklings. It's only people who have no power who insist on ethical behavior, and that he was going to rid the world of the two blemishes on humanity, which is Brit Milah and the Jewish people, and the conscience of the Jewish people, and that that would perfect the world. Now, where does that energy come from? That was a tremendous amount of energy, but it goes along with what's happening on the other side of the equation, which is we see a rising up of Jewish people who are not religious, not people who are looking to the land of Israel from a religious perspective, people who are secular, who are looking to come back to the land. And now we are very close. Almost a majority of the Jews of the world live in the land of Israel. The population has gone up exponentially. In addition to the births, the people who are coming, and where are they coming mostly from? Mostly from countries where there's anti-Semitism. And says, if you go to Netanya now, you only hear French. That's all you hear. It's French. You know, that I saw that a Jewish family was abducted in France and beaten up and robbed. This was like, I don't know, yesterday, the day before. Now it doesn't even hardly make the news. So it's like things are very scary. So this energy of when things are going in the right direction, there is a comparable energy going in the wrong direction, and it forces the choice. It calls for the question of what's going to happen and what's going to be. So with the almost a majority of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel, that triggers a whole lot of other things. There's some Jewish laws that come into effect when the majority is there. Just the fact that there are that many Jewish people there. And who would have thought? Who would have thought? We never would have believed it. It was supposed to be like, oh, maybe like a place where people go when they're really desperate, you know, like a city of refuge. You just like go there until the trouble dies down. Not that's where we make our home, and that's where we build, and that's where we live. So it's a strange time. So the worst things are looking in the paper, on the news. It's almost a sign of, that's good news. That means this other power is up there also, because you don't have one without the other. So the negative is a sign that the positive is alive and well and growing. Okay? That's weird to think about. It almost makes you wonder, like, well, let's not have it be too good, because that means we're going to trigger all this other negative. However, those things, that falsehood always burns itself out. It said anything that's based on falsehood has a limited lifespan. So we have seen in human history, we have seen the church, we've seen the Catholic Church through its Inquisition trying to impose itself on the Jewish people. We have seen the non-a-religious, we've seen the fascism, communism, and those groups try to prevail on the Jewish people. And now we'll see the final third group, which is Islam. And I'm not saying that every Muslim feels this way. That is the general tenor of the Islamic people at this time. Elisa.
Yeah. I was just saying, Theodore Herzl wrote his book, The Old New Land, in 1896, and it was just the first Zionist Congress was in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland, and it was just in 1948, just 52 years after Herzl wrote his book, that Israel became. Who would have thought? Country.
Who would have thought? I mean, it was the dream for thousands of years. It's unbelievable. So we don't, and you know, we're so in it.
Yeah.
We're in the fishbowl, so we don't see what's going on. We can't even appreciate all the dynamics of what's going on because we're in the story. So it's harder to have a grasp of what is happening and what those cosmic powers might be. Joanna.
Is this true on, like, you were talking, like, kind of on a world scale, but is this true, like, on a minor scale as well? Like, even down to, like, the individual and, like, what's going on in their life? A lot of times it does seem that way. Like, you try to make positive changes in your life and all this, like, external negative stuff happens.
Absolutely. So it's called the Yetzer Hara, evil inclination, the opposing force, the impeding force. It's huge. That's why we try to do things that get under the radar screen of that energy, because by definition, the world exists in balance. So that when there is a move to go in a positive direction, it's an invitation. And it's not that there's something wrong with us. It's an invitation for this opposing force to get in our life and try to stop us. That is just the nature of it. If we don't know that that force is going to be there, we will never have any strategies for overcoming it. We'll just keep being shocked and surprised and caught off guard because we don't know what to do with it. It's one of the reasons that before a wedding, why the bride and the groom, each the day before the wedding, some people for a week, have a shomer, have someone who stays with them, a friend who stays with them, because they're on the verge of creating a new reality. That means something huge is getting ready to happen. That means that there are negative forces that can easily kind of trip that person up. You know, they fall down the steps and break their leg, or they, you know, get in a fight, or something happens to just counter that simcha energy of the wedding. So the shomer is somebody who kind of keeps your eye on you. You know, people say, I mean, I remember I felt like before we got married, Steve's roommates were coming. His college roommates were coming because we got married right after we graduated. They were coming for the wedding, coming to Denver, so they wanted to go to the mountains, like on the weekend on the day we're getting married. So I'm like, you are not going to the mountains on the day of our wedding. That's like, just seems like, I'm picturing like all the disasters that could happen. You know, fall, God forbid, fall off a cliff, get in a car accident. I mean, you could, all those things could happen to you anywhere. But it's like, you don't go looking for trouble. So just stay put, you know, just stay still. And yeah, so no mountains on wedding day. Stay away. So, but it is that force. It's like, you have to be careful. So when there is this energy, it's one of the reasons why we start doing positive things with very small steps. Because if we have a big grand plan, it's like, oh, big grand plan. It's like asking for this other opposing energy. And you say, well, I'm not really doing anything. I'm just doing, you know, I'm not going to spend, you know, 6 hours learning. I just want to see what the name of the parsha is. I'm not doing anything. Okay, so I'll just read the first verse. Okay, I'll just, you know, maybe I'll read a little. And we just do it slowly, slowly. It says, by doing things slowly, we help not invite that negative force into to oppose it, because there is a definite force. We are on a scrimmage. We're in it like a football game. There's a scrimmage line. And if we sometimes just, like, walk onto the field and we don't even know we're in the game. So then, you know, what happens if the quarterback doesn't know he's in the game and the opposing team is actually there? Gets sacked. Okay, so we don't want to do that. So that's in our personal lives as well. So we don't want to get sacked. It's interesting, they call the destruction of the temple like the sacking. Like, it's like sacked. The sacking of Jerusalem. So in the destruction. So let's talk about these 3 weeks and about Tisha B'Av from a very interesting, different perspective. When we say 3 weeks, these are 3 weeks that started on the 17th of Tammuz, and we have some aspects of semi-mourning. So there have been no parties, there's been no music, nobody's getting married, nobody's buying new clothing. Everything is like a little bit like you are in shloshim, almost, of the 30 days after someone passes away. We're in a state of mourning for these 3 weeks, starting tonight and tomorrow's Friday is Rosh Chodesh Av. Then we have 9 days of intensified mourning where we don't have any meat or wine Or launder clothing and put on something nice, fresh clothing. If you want to wear clothing that's been washed, you can take it and put it on the floor and kind of stand on it, stomp it around a little bit so it's not fresh. Just like you would do if you're sitting Shiva. You don't change clothes. You don't put on freshly laundered clothes. We're making ourselves sadder and sadder and sadder with the saddest day coming a week from Sunday on Tisha B'Av, on the 9th of Av itself. So first of all, what are we mourning? So we say, I can't really relate to the fact that we don't have the temple. You know, it's, what are we mourning? So there's another rabbi who I heard, now I forget his name, who said, if you went to a village and you were bringing somebody, you wanted to bring somebody a gift, but you didn't have anything, so you just stopped at the market and you gave them a potato. And when the kid got, you gave the potato to the child, and the child started dancing around saying, hooray, it's a potato, I'm so excited, this is the best thing ever, thank you so much. What would you know about that family? They must have nothing if they think this potato is so exciting. Says, that's the Jewish people. Says, when we go to Israel, when we go to the land of Israel, where does everybody want to go as a spiritual focal point? The Kotel. Oh, the Kotel. Oh, it was amazing. Oh my gosh, I could feel it. Just the bricks. It's like, that's the potato, folks. Says, the Kotel is a piece of the retaining wall that was around the area of the mountain where the Beit HaMikdash stood. Says, there's something missing here. It's called, what about the rest of it? This is the potato. And it's not saying that it's not amazing, it's not beautiful, because the holiness is incredible. But now multiply that times the whole thing, the entire expanse. Imagine the Beit HaMikdash rebuilt and the holiness, if that's just the retaining wall and that's already a something, it's potatoes compared to the whole thing. But on Tisha B'Av, we're supposed to make ourselves aware of what we have is potatoes, and what we want is the whole meal. And the whole meal deal is the entire Beit HaMikdash. It's the entire thing with the Jewish people sovereign in the land, our borders secure, not like, oh, well, you know, if we do this or this, they don't bother us so much. Somebody actually tried to tell me, it's like, well, you know, things are actually pretty good. You know, we can, for the most part, do what we want to do when we want to do. It's like, for the most part, seriously? Things are potatoes. We want more. So Tisha B'Av says that's what we're mostly crying over. Is we can't think so much like, oh, I'm crying over the destruction of the temple. That's harder to think about than to say, what are we missing? Human beings have the ability to acclimate to almost anything. It's like if you sent your kid to the room for a timeout and they want to stay in the room for the rest of their life. You say, well, I like my room. I like my bed. I have my music. I have my phone. So I don't need my whole house and my whole life. I'll stay in my room. The parents would be upset. It's like, don't you even want to come out? Aren't you sad? Don't you want to rejoin? What's the matter with you? So Tisha B'Av is like, what's the matter with us? And we're missing a lot. But we've been in the missing a lot for such a long time. It's like, we're in our room. It's a nice room. There's some kosher restaurants in our room, and we can, you know, go to a class. We can, you know, be with our friends. So what's so bad? It's like, think about what is so bad. It is potatoes compared to the whole meal. So this time we are supposed to make ourselves aware of this. We do this by making ourselves intentionally more and more sad through our external actions so that can trigger some internal responses. If we wait to feel sad before we do anything that cultivates sadness, then it will never happen because we're too disconnected from it. So we have all these things that we do that make us feel sad. You're sitting there wearing clothes that you just stomped on before you put them on, and you don't have any meat. As I said, I guess for people who are vegetarians, they don't notice the difference. But somehow, even people who are vegetarians know, you know, just because they don't have meat, they can't have wine, and everything is like very, very solemn and somber. It changes the way we feel. So what are we doing? So we have these 3 weeks, and it culminates in Tisha B'Av. It says, these 3 weeks have a parallel in the realm of Simcha. They have a Simcha parallel of another 3 weeks that has a culminating day of happiness. Does anybody know what those 3 weeks are? We're getting close to them, actually. Sukkot will be part of that, part of those 3 weeks. So starting at Rosh Hashanah, from Rosh Hashanah through Shemini Atzeret, those 3 weeks are a time of Simcha. Those 3 weeks are a time of simcha, happiness, joy, and it culminates. It gets just like the 3 weeks now get sadder and sadder. the 3 weeks that will start with Rosh Hashanah get happier and happier. So on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we say good Yontif. It should be a good day. By the time we hit Sukkot, it's Chag Sameach, a holiday of Simcha. And then on Shemini Atzeret, which is also Zman Simchatenu, we're only Simcha, Ach Sameach, nothing but Simcha. That's what we're doing on Shemini Atzeret. So Shemini Atzeret and Tisha B'Av are exact mirror opposites of each other. One is the ultimate Simcha, and one is the ultimate pain. And we're told in the future that this pain of Tisha B'Av will revert back to the joy of Shemini Atzeret, what we call Simchas Torah, that eighth day. The number eight always has to do with transcendence, the being able to transcend time, transcend limitations of nature. It's into the ultimate dimensions of perfection is Shemini Atzeret. We don't even need anything on Shemini Atzeret. What do we have on Shemini Atzeret? No lulav, no etrog, no sukkah. It's just us, the Torah, and God. And we just dance and dance and dance. The hakafas, we go around and around and around, and we're dancing. It's like a wedding. So Shemini Atzeret is like a wedding, and Tisha B'Av is the funeral. Okay, it's the separation or the divorce. However, it's the time of separation, and this is the time of joy and happiness. So they are exact opposites. Okay. On Tisha B'Av, we are going to read the Book of Lamentations, which was written by Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu. Now, Yirmiyahu is a prophet who was the one who brought the warning to the Jewish people before the destruction, as well as witnessing the destruction. He was so pained by what he saw and what he experienced that he actually said that he wished that his mother had never given birth to him, and that God had lured him into being a prophet. Because if you're tapped to be a prophet, and now you will be a prophet to the Jewish people, he's like, wonderful, I'll be able to give, you know, good news to the Jewish people. It's like, well, I have something to tell you. Your job is actually going to be to warn the Jewish people, and it's going to possibly not turn out so well. So Yirmiyahu is called, I mean, imagine this on your resume, the Navi of Churban, the prophet of destruction. It's like, I'd rather be, you know, somebody else. So who would I rather be? It says the opposite person. It says, who is the person that's associated with Shemini Atzeret, with Simchas Torah? That person is Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. It says, he who wrote Shir HaShirim, which is the Song of Songs, that's the love story, is again the polar opposite of Lamentations, which is the separation story. So we have Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, and it said that he had the great fortune of achieving everything he wanted in his life. Everything. Everything he wanted, he achieved. Any goal he had, he got. It says, that's not normal. All of us have things. You could say, well, maybe he didn't want so much, so he didn't have so much. He wanted a lot. He had a lot of resources. He had a lot of desires. He had a lot of things that he wanted to achieve. He achieved every single one of them, including what was it that King Solomon had the privilege to do? He got to build the temple. He got to build the temple. His father, King David, was not allowed to, but King Solomon built the temple. And again, the parallel of Jeremiah was the destruction of the temple. So each one is, again, the polar opposite. But here's something very interesting. So our sages teach us that Jeremiah is actually a reincarnation of King Solomon.
Oh,
that's big. Yeah, I'm like, whoa, okay, that's interesting. Jeremiah is a reincarnation of King Solomon. Now, you might think, well, that's kind of going in the wrong direction because King Solomon lived before Jeremiah. So you would think that in a reincarnation, you would get like a better job description the second time around than the first time around. King Solomon, and then later, he comes back as Jeremiah. And the Jeremiah is aware of this. And so his pain, when he writes Echa, when he writes Lamentations, his lament over the destruction of the temple. Now what is his lament? If he's a reincarnation of King Solomon who built the temple, that's a whole other level of pain. anytime we see something that we built get destroyed, if we see something that got destroyed that was very valuable, we say, oh my gosh, that is such a shame. But when it's your house and you built it, that's a whole other level of pain. And that was the pain that Jeremiah had, and that's the pain that is in the book of Lamentations. So that he is considered a Gilgal, he is a reincarnation. So the question is, what happened to King Solomon that happened? So unfortunately, King Solomon, the kings are told, the Jewish kings are told that they are not supposed to have too many wives or too many horses. And not because horses and wives are the same thing. The horses had to do with going back to Egypt to buy really good Egyptian horses, and that it was going to take the Jewish people in the wrong direction. Too many wives, and that there would be, I don't know, trouble, tsuris, and they're not supposed to have too many wives, even though they can afford them, and they can do whatever they need to do in order to be good husbands to them. But King Solomon thought that he was above that. That's the only thing. That was his, like, only thing, is he thought he was above that, and so he had a lot of horses, and he had a lot of wives. And he married, it said, a woman from Tyre, T-Y-R-E. It says, and then after his marriage, that next morning, he got up late. And that next morning was supposed to be the opening day of the Beit HaMikdash, the opening day of the temple after he had built it. And he was late for the opening. So on that day, the Midrash says that God sunk a pole into the ocean, and around that land developed, and it created the Italian peninsula, which became Rome, which then sacked and destroyed the temple. So what was that? It says, I gave you everything. I gave you the privilege. Your father wanted to build the temple, and you got to. You thought you were above it all, and that you could marry and go off, and your head got turned away, and you were late. And I don't mean just like, oh, like 2 seconds late. Late, late. This has to be corrected. You're going to see the pain, the destruction that comes from turning away from your mission. You can't do that. Especially Shlomo HaMelech, he was the epitome. We're told Mashiach will be a descendant of Shlomo. It'll be his line that's going to come back and be Mashiach. Rome came from that, from Shlomo's mistake, and he was then reincarnated as Jeremiah and got to witness that the destruction of the temple and to see how errors like that can be so disastrous. And we say, well, that is really strong. However, we're also taught that that's going to turn around and that Jeremiah will be reincarnated again as King Shlomo, that he will come back and Tisha B'Av will come back and be Shmini Atzeret, and we will have another Yontif. Just when you thought we didn't have enough Yontifs, we're going to have another Yontif, even with the Kiddush. That'll be the Yom Tish, take the Kiddush cup, the Yom Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, this great day of Simcha, this complete turnaround. It says, what was the transformation? What is going to create the transformation? So we transform time by transforming ourselves. That in the spiritual world, remember we've talked about this over the years, we've talked about the 12 tribes of the Jewish people have a counterpart in time of the 12 months of the Jewish calendar year. So there is a one-for-one correspondence of what's happening in the people happens in the dimension of time. So if the times are difficult, it means that the change can be affected through changing the people. You change the people, you change the times. We change ourselves, we change the nature of what's going on around us. To have Tisha B'Av no longer be a time of sadness or pain will come from transforming ourselves so that we create that one-for-one correspondence. Otherwise, you think, like, what are we doing on Tisha B'Av? We spend the whole day, the whole 3 weeks, are talking about not speaking Lashon Hara, about love of fellow Jews, about improving our relationships one for the other, because of the sin of sinat chinam, of baseless hatred, that caused the destruction of the temple to begin with, the second temple. Because it was destroyed because of sinat chinam, of baseless hatred, the way we fix it and the way we fix Tisha B'Av and turn it into a simcha is through fixing ourselves. We don't have a We Hate Rome Day. We don't have a We Hate Babylonia Day. We don't have a We Hate Spain Day. We don't have a We Hate France Day. We don't have a We Hate England Day. We don't have a We Hate Iran Day. We don't have a Hate Anybody Day. We have a How Can We Fix Ourselves So That The Times Will Change, because it's in our hands. So it's like, that's such a heavy responsibility. On the other hand, it's a tremendous blessing, because then we're not victims of other people. We have something to say about it, and we have a way to act and react and respond that can change reality. And that is pretty amazing.
So,
Patricia.
In the upcoming day of Tish B'Av, will our sorrow, the Jewish people's collective sorrow, then affect the time? I mean, is it our responsibility to, yeah, I mean, is the effort then going to be seen in a positive light?
Yes. Let me see if I think I understand what you're saying. Our goal is to be in as much pain as possible, because it tells us what we really want. If we say, I'm not missing anything and everything's fine, then why should anything change? If you're so happy with it, so be it, keep it. If we say, no, I'm so sad, I'm miserable, I'm so upset, things are not the way they're supposed to be, I want something different, I want something more, I want the world perfected, and we lose some sleep over that, that is beneficial. That transforms. Now, we have to do our part. It says, I'm so upset about how things are that I want to transform myself so that it will transform the time. Otherwise, there's no incentive to do anything. If I'm totally happy with how everything is, just like mildly upset, mildly miffed, mildly, if we're just like, you know, clucking our tongues about it, then that's not called sad. If I am grieving over this, then I have a chance to ignite myself, to make changes, to transform myself, to really transform the time. And I was very happy to hear, it says it's not going to take all the Jewish people to do this. Lest we think, like, there'll never be. Some people don't even know it's Tisha B'Av. They don't know it's the 3 weeks. They don't know anything about the whole thing. It says, don't worry. It says the Jewish people, even small groups of them, have tremendous power. So we don't have to worry. Like, yes, it'd be nice to have as many people joining us in the effort as possible, but we don't need to worry that it's going to take everybody in order to turn everything around. It's not true. So that's I thought that was a big relief that was not the case. So that is not true. Okay, so here's some interesting hints about this. The fast of Tisha B'Av comes in the month of Av, which is the fifth month. So if we count starting from Nisan, so we went from Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av. So it's called the fast of the fifth. Okay? So Tzom Chachamisha. Okay? Tzom Chamisha. That word Chamisha are the same letters as Mashiach. Okay, so just take the same letters, just to rearrange them. That means it's the fast of the Messiah, the fast of the Redeemer. Which means that on the one hand we're fasting because we're in pain. On the other hand, we're saying that very moment, that lowest place that we get to, is the beginning, are the seeds of redemption. So that the lower we can go and get ourselves, it's like a person who has to hit bottom before they can come up. It says, the Jewish people, we have to hit bottom, and that propels us and gives us the energy to go up. Five or fifth, the Chamisha. So, from the like the word Chumash. It's right, it's actually, yeah. Okay. So that we have Mashiach, so it's the idea of that connection to the Redeemer. In addition to that, the book of Echa, of Lamentations, is called, it's a Megillah, Megillat Echa. Okay, Megillat Echa, just like Megillat Esther, Megillat Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. So the Megillat Echa has two interesting gematrias that it's the same as. And we know if something has the same numerical formula, it means they are connected, even if we can't see it. So one of them is, Megillat Echa is the same gematria as Chatan V'Kala, which means bride and groom. It's like, how's that? Echa is about, it's like a divorced woman, it's like a forgotten woman, da da da. It's like, that's not about Chatan and Kala. It says, ah, but the pain comes because they're supposed to be reunited as a Chatan and Kala. So it is equal to Chatan v'Kala, the book of Echa. It's also at the same gematria as Melech HaMashiach ben David. King Messiah, the son of David, is equal Megillat Echa. And we say that Mashiach is born on Echa. I'm sorry, on Tisha B'Av. So we have this book, Megillat Echa, which starts out, Echa. Okay, it's a lament. There's nothing sadder. You could, even if you don't know what it's saying, if you just hear the music by someone who knows how to do it, you will start crying just from the music alone. It's so haunting. It's so sad. It's so depressing. And we sit on the ground. We turn out the lights. We mourn, just like we're sitting there. And the meal that we eat before Tisha B'Av starts, not this year because it's Shabbos right beforehand, but normally we have a meal of a hard-boiled egg dipped in ashes and a piece of bread. And you can make some good ashes out of a paper bag, just so you know. But this year we don't do it because it's Shabbos and we're going right into Tisha B'Av. But normally you sit on the ground. Now that'll make you plenty sad. You sit there and you have this ash in your mouth on a hard-boiled egg and bread, and you don't talk to anybody. You sit by yourself and you feel how sad and what that's really like. So that's how we...
Does bread need to be like stale?
It doesn't need to be stale that I know of, but it's...
A lot of bread is really good. Make it
I can tell you, though, if you have a hard-boiled egg with ashes and bread, the bread can be really, really good. It doesn't take away from that pungent taste of the ashes. Ashes are, there's a reason they're not on anybody's menu.
Isn't that carcinogenic?
The amount of that, I wouldn't worry about. That's why I actually suggested using a paper bag as opposed to something that has other treated. But yeah, it's not great for you. But the amount, it's not like you have a bucket full. You just dip your egg in it. And that's what you have. So that meal is a meal of such mourning and such pain, and that's how we enter in. But that is going to turn around and become a time of tremendous happiness. When we have, so Jeremiah is considered the guest for, again, who wants to, he's our guest at our seuda, at this meal when we're sitting there with our ashes and egg and bread most years. And who's the guest who is there sitting with us? Says Jeremiah is sitting with us, and he is lamenting, and he remembers. It says he remembers that he was Shlomo HaMelech, that he was King Solomon before, and King Solomon, it says he's a guest also. He's a guest at another meal. We're all familiar with the 7 days of Sukkot, and each day there's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Moses, Aaron, Joseph, and David. Those are for the 7 days of Sukkot, and then Shmini Atzeret. Did you ever notice that there's no guest? So there actually is a guest. King Solomon. King Shlomo HaMelech is the guest for Shemini Atzeret. It's like, wow, he gets this meal and Yirmiyahu gets this meal. And the pain of Yirmiyahu is like, I used to be the king who had a king's feast, and now I'm in the ashes and egg and bread and sitting on the floor feast. It's like, what could be worse? But that Yirmiyahu remembers this, and he knows that there's going to be a time where it will change around and it will turn around. And hopefully that time comes quickly. Even in the Book of Lamentations, it says, God will not forsake us forever. This is going to turn around. There is hope. Have hope. As bad as it gets, have hope. Don't despair. And let's take a look at the text itself is on in the back of the Chumash. We'll take a look at Lamentations for a moment. If you turn to...
1278.
Okay, and now just skip ahead to 1278. Verse 21. Bethan, do you want to read that for us? Verse 21, it's right toward the end of, on 1278.
Oh, I see. All right. Bring us back to you, Hashem, and we shall return, renew our days of old. For even if you had utterly rejected us,
You have already raged sufficiently against us.
And then again, the
law. His back to Hashem, and we shall return, renew our days as of old.
Okay, Hashivenu. Hashem Elecha v'nashuva chadesh yameinu kekedem. We sing this frequently, right? We sing this all the time. Hashivenu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva chadesh yameinu kekedem. Yes, and the reason we sing it twice is so as not to end on that, on verse 22 of that negative note. Because we never end negatively. No matter how bad things are, we end on a positive note. And so we end up with that, renew our days as of old. And it says that this is particularly... Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah is saying this is renew our days as they had been. Did you ever wonder, like, as they had been when? As they had been when I was king and I was King Shlomo HaMelech, when I built the temple and when the temple was there. It says, otherwise, renew our days as of old. It's like, what? When we say, oh, back in the good old days, what good old days is he talking about? He's talking about those good old days when I lived and I was King Solomon. I was there and renewed that. So the Shmini Atzeret is considered a day where it is a hint of messianic time. It says, again, because it's this eighth day which transcends limitations of nature, it says it is a time of messianic times, and that's what we're going to return to, that God gives us a taste of that on the holiday, and that we will return to that where everything will be like Shmini Atzeret. There will only be pleasure. There will only be happiness. There will only be that all of our worthwhile goals will reach their fulfillment. Now we just assume we're not going to reach all of our goals. You know, something's going to get in the way. So that's not going to happen when Mashiach comes. Everything's going to work out just like it did for Shlomo HaMelech, just like King Solomon. Everything will work out. And that the time will be transformed from a time of weeping to a time of joy. So here's something that's also interesting, which I did not know. Well, I mean, I didn't really think about it in this way, which is that Tisha B'Av is called a Moed. Like Moedim L'Simcha, it's called a time. It says the only things that are called Moed are things that have a future, not things that are like, it's over. So Tisha B'Av, you'd think, destruction of the temple, it's over. How can you call it a Moed? Moed means it has a future, brightness. So the fact that we call it a Moed and we treat it like a Moed, that there's some prayers that are done on really, on sad days that we don't do. We don't do them because we're in anticipation already that Tisha B'Av is going to become a holiday. So how do we do that? How do we transform ourselves? How do we transform ourselves and therefore transform time? It says one of the things that we need to know is that every person has inside of them a spark of every other Jewish person who's ever lived. Because we're all connected. Just like a cell in your body has the DNA for your whole body. That's why they can take a cheek cell and do whatever, because it has the DNA for everything. At the spiritual level, our neshama has a spark of every single other person, which means we have a Jeremiah spark and we have a King Solomon spark. We have both of those. And we have everybody else as well. And it is our choice to activate and to fan the sparks of people who have lived in the past who we want to connect ourselves with. We don't have to pretend like we are just starting from square one, because we're not. We have everything is in us and lies in spark potential waiting for us to fan it so that we can be like Shlomo HaMelech, or we can be on this path of destruction as characterized more by Yirmiyahu. And our goal is to choose that. But Shmini Atzeret and Tisha B'Av, Jeremiah and King Solomon always go hand in hand. So let's look at, yes, Susan.
Are we supposed to choose the spark of King Solomon and not the spark of King Solomon?
Choose King Solomon. Choose King Solomon because he was, remember, he wrote Shir HaShirim. He wrote Song of Songs, and he lived in that dimension. He lived in the dimension of completeness, wholeness, simcha, and if it wouldn't have been for his final error, that would have been it. That would have been it. That things would have been perfect.
Well, what about Kohelis?
He wrote that at the end of his life after the... But how does he end Kohelis? He starts off negative and he ends positive.
Yes.
He says at the end of time, the only thing you need to know is serve Hashem. That
yes.
Be happy with your wife of your youth. And we read Kohelet on Sukkot. And Sof Devar, the sum of the matter, page 1287. The sum of the matter, when all has been considered, fear God and keep his commandments, for that is man's whole duty. It's like, and he says in here, Kohelet, I've done everything. I've achieved everything. Anything that somebody thought, like, I would like this.
Nothing new under the sun.
Nothing new under the sun. I have done it all. So I'm here to tell you. Instead of spinning your wheels and thinking, I'll do this, I'll do that. It's like, I'm telling you. Bottom line, Sof Devar, the bottom line is serve God, keep His commandments. That is your purpose. That is your truest pleasure. That is your joy. That's your happiness. So this is his, this is the Kohelet represents his wisdom. Now there's something else also interesting, which is that we, last week's Parsha was Parsha Pinchas. Now Parsha Pinchas has a lot of interesting things in it, but what it has at the end, if you just go to page 893, actually, page 891 is where it starts. Page 891, the section of Pinchas that goes through all of the holidays. And it starts off with Shabbos, and it goes to Rosh Chodesh, and then turn the page. Then we have Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. And after Sukkot, it goes through all of the sacrifices for Sukkot, and on page 897, it goes to Shmini Atzeret. Now, just in that listing alone, even though our minds are a little bit off track sometimes because we start Rosh Hashanah, which is a new year, and so we think that Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the year, right? It's Rosh Hashanah. It's a happy new year. But it's not really the beginning of the holiday year. It's really coming to the end of the holiday year. The holiday year starts with Pesach, and then it goes to Shavuos. And then it goes to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Shmini Atzeret represents the final conclusion, the epitome, where we're all going. That's the end game. That's where we're going. That represents the grand finale. This listing here goes in that order and brings us to Shmini Atzeret at the very end of this Parsha. So what's interesting is Parsha Pinchas almost always coincides with the 3 weeks. So we just said that Shmini Atzeret, that the person who goes with Shmini Atzeret is King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, and he represents the times of Mashiach because it's going to be his descendant that is going to be Mashiach. That's when there's going to be redemption. That's where we're going to take the Chamisha and turn it into Mashiach. We're going to take that and change it. So the Haftorah that comes at this time, if you turn to page 1192. Usually the Haftorah of Pinchas is not read. It's kind of a complicated thing. So we did not read Parsha. We did not read the Haftorah of Pinchas this past Shabbos. We read this one, Haftorah Matot. Okay, and who is this by? Look on page 1192. Jeremiah. This comes from Jeremiah. So here we have the juxtaposition. So the person who is called up for the final Torah reading, the Maftir Torah reading, who is going to be the person who recites the Haftorah, but blesses, makes the blessing and has the Aliyah on the Torah portion that's the end of the Parsha, is going to have those two things together in one package. How are we going into these 3 weeks? Shmini Atzeret, Echa, or Jeremiah. We're going King Solomon and Jeremiah. Those two things, if we don't put those together and we don't see that the one is going to lead to the other and that there's going to be a return, so the person is going to talk about Shmini Atzeret and is follow and going through Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret and talking about all the happiness that comes there, then that same person is going to then recite the Haftorah from Jeremiah and go to this place of lament. But don't go into a place of lamenting unless we have the cushion of knowing that it started with Shmini Atzeret and the end game is Shmini Atzeret. It's not just like, oh, the Jewish holidays and the festivals and it has to do with agriculture and it's this and that. This is talking about a pattern for our lives, a pattern for all of human history, a pattern for the destiny of creation is. It starts at the beginning of Nisan, which is creation, and it ends at Shmini Atzeret, which is the fulfillment of all potential. That's what Mashiach means. All potential will be fulfilled. King Solomon fulfilled all of his potential, all of the things he wanted, he was able to do. That's not normal, but that's the time of Mashiach. So we go in with that cushion of Shmini Atzeret to enter into the 3 weeks, that we are part of now to cushion us with Tisha B'Av, to say there's a potential for transformation, it will transform, the times will be different, we will have a moed, it will be a time of simcha, and our job is to transform ourselves in order to help the transformation of the times get better. The challenges and the difficulties that we see in our life and in our world now are only an indication that things are reaching their final conclusion, and that we have to get through it, and we have to do what we can to transform those days to times of joy and happiness. God willing, we'll be able to do it. We can do it through our study of Torah, our love of one another, our acts of kindness, not speaking Lashon Hara, all the things that show a love of the Jewish people and our connection of one for the other, that's what will bring us all together. Because the temple is the place where the Jewish people came to be together. So if we're not together, there's no reason to have a temple to bring us together. So first we have to show that we are together, and then we can have the place where the Jewish people come together. For now we have potatoes. We're happy with potatoes, but we'd really like to have the full meal deal. God willing, we'll have it very, very soon. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll see you next week. And my son Benjamin will give the class for us, and I will join you on the other side of the table there and look forward to it. Yes. Yes. He's coming in on Monday.
He'll be here, and he'll be there, but there was also you and your mom.
Oh, that's true. Yes, the generations. I wish my mom could come. Yeah, she's doing okay. She just can't. She can't.